Imagine taking a drug that is so just so unimaginably powerful. Within 30 seconds, not only do the physical walls around you completely disappear, but the very concept that you are a human being, like with the name, a past, a body, is just entirely deleted.
Right, it's gone.
Yeah, the idea of you just vanishes. And today, we are looking at the exact biological switch that turns you off.
It really is a profound, almost microscopic look into how your brain actively constructs the very concept of identity. Because, every memory you hold, your daily anxieties, your sense of being a separate individual walking through the world, all of that is an active biological construction.
Yeah.
So what happens when the underlying machinery for that construction is just shut down in a matter of seconds? We're basically talking about dismantling the architecture of human identity.
It's intense. Welcome to today's deep dive. We are exploring a genuinely stunning piece of source material today from the OOTW Journal. It was published on July 30, 2026, and the article is titled 5-MeO-DMT and Ego Dissolution: The Neuroscience of the Void.
Quite a title.
I mean, it sets the stage perfectly, right? The core mission of today's deep dive is to explore the substance, which has controversially earned the nickname the God molecule.
Yeah, that name is everywhere now.
It really is. And we're going to examine how it doesn't just alter consciousness or, provide a colorful visionary journey, but fundamentally erases the traveler. We'll look at the unprecedented potential this holds for treating severe stubborn depression. And because we absolutely have to be honest about the pharmacology here, the very real life-threatening risks associated with it.
And for you listening, whether you have a deep background in pharmacology or you're simply curious about how the mind works, the implications here are just massive. This isn't merely a breakdown of a fringe psychedelic compound. It is a lens into the fundamental mechanics of consciousness itself.
Exactly.
It challenges our most basic assumptions about what is real, what constitutes suffering, and, whether the key to alleviating that suffering involves fixing the ego or simply removing it entirely.
Okay, let's unpack this because we need to start with the physical reality of what the substance actually is. The molecule is 5-MeO-JDMT. Its full chemical name is 5-methoxy-N,N-dimethyltryptamine, and in some of the clinical literature, you'll actually see it referred to as mebufotenin.
Right, that's the generic name they're using in a lot of the new trials.
Yeah, and as a tryptamine, it shares a chemical skeleton with serotonin, which is the neurotransmitter already in your brain regulating your mood and sleep and digestion. It's also a chemical cousin to classic DMT, the stuff famously found in South American ayahuasca brews. But our source material points out this tiny, just incredibly tiny structural divergence. 5-MeO-DMT has a single extra methoxy group attached to its molecular ring.
And that single methoxy group is a perfect illustration of how incredibly sensitive the human nervous system is to geometric changes.
Right.
I mean, if you look at classic DMT, it is known for producing these vivid, incredibly immersive, intensely colorful, visionary
Right,
landscapes.
the classic trip.
Exactly. People report interacting with entities, seeing sprawling fractal cities,
Yeah.
flying through hyperspace, all that. Then you add this one microscopic cluster, an oxygen atom bonded to a methyl group, that's the methoxy group, and you get an entirely different physiological and psychological event.
It's wild.
You go from a kaleidoscope of visions
Yeah.
to an absolute non-visual whiteout. It's just fascinating how a microscopic change in the geometry of a molecule dictates a macroscopic shift in human consciousness.
It fundamentally changes the key that is entering the lock in your brain. And its origins in the natural world are honestly just as bizarre as its chemistry. This isn't just something synthesized in a sterile laboratory, although, as we'll discuss later, that is absolutely where the medical field is heading right
Yeah,
now.
for sure. It has to.
But in nature, 5-MeO-DMT is famously found in the defensive venom of the Sonoran desert toad, which is also known as the Colorado River toad, or by its scientific name, Insilius alvarius. And when this toad is threatened, it secretes this milky white substance from glands on its back and legs. It's also found in the seeds and bark of certain plants used by indigenous cultures in South America to make traditional psychoactive snuffs, like yopo, which comes from the Anadinanthera tree.
And the cross-species presence of this molecule is just a biological puzzle in itself. I mean, you have a desert toad in North America and a leguminous tree in the Amazon basin independently producing the exact same highly complex, profoundly psychoactive alkaloid.
Which is strange enough on its own, but here is the detail from the OOTW Journal piece that I simply could not get past. I was reading this and I had to stop. This molecule also appears in trace amounts naturally within the human body.
Yes, that is the detail that catches everyone off guard.
Right. It has been detected in human blood, in urine, in cerebrospinal fluid. And modern science currently has absolutely no idea what its function is. It is just floating around inside of us, this incredibly potent compound, serving an entirely elusive purpose.
It's one of the great lingering mysteries in neurobiology right now. We have this profoundly powerful compound endogenously present in our own physiology. Some researchers hypothesize it might, you know, play a role in dreaming or maybe in states of extreme physiological stress or even during the dying process. There's no consensus.
Just theories.
Right. The endogenous function remains a black box. However, when it is introduced exogenously so, when it is consumed from an outside source, typically by being vaporized and inhaled, the pharmacology is completely observable and it is extreme.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the timeline, because the timeline of the experience when vaporized is what makes it so shocking to the nervous system. From the moment the vapor is inhaled, the onset happens within roughly 30 seconds.
So it's incredibly fast.
Right. You go from a normal baseline waking reality to the absolute peak of the experience in 1 to 5 minutes. And then, astonishingly, you return completely to baseline within about 30 minutes.
The paradox of that timeline is what researchers find so compelling. I mean, it is one of the fastest, shortest experiences known to psychedelic science, and yet, universally, users describe it as the most intense experience of their entire lives.
But wait, if the onset is that fast, if my ego, like the very core of my identity, is dissolving in 30 seconds, how is the brain not completely panicking? Because if I'm losing my grip on reality that quickly, shouldn't my fight-or-flight response just be going into absolute overdrive?
Well, in many cases, there is a momentary spike in fear.
Yeah.
But because it hits the system in just 30 seconds, your brain is quite literally ambushed.
Oh.
It doesn't even have the time to throw up its usual psychological defenses or figure out what's happening. The neurological mechanisms that construct the feeling of fear, the mechanisms that say, I am in danger,
yeah,
they require a functioning sense of I.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. When the eye is chemically disassembled that rapidly, the fear often just dissipates because there is no longer a subject left to experience the fear. The entity that would be panicking has been taken offline.
That is, wow. It is a total subjective whiteout. And I think the word whiteout is interesting because when we think of classic psychedelics like LSD or psilocybin, we think of dissolving boundaries, sure. You might feel a deep connection to nature or feel like you are vibrating at the same frequency as the universe.
Right.
But crucially, those classic psychedelics leave a witness behind to watch the beautiful light show. Like you come back from a psilocybin trip and say, I saw this incredible geometric pattern. I felt this profound emotion. 5-MeO-DMT removes the witness entirely.
Exactly.
The source uses the clinical phrase, oceanic boundlessness. It's not a journey of visions. It's an experience where the boundary between self and the universe vanishes into a void.
Oceanic boundlessness strips away the fundamental dualism of our normal waking state.
Right.
Our entire reality is built on the dualism of the observer and the observed.
Right, like subject and object.
Exactly. You are sitting there observing a tree. You are the subject. The tree is the object. 5-MeO-DMT collapses that dualism. The observer ceases to exist as a distinct entity, and what remains is just an undifferentiated state of being.
To put it in everyday terms, I like to think about your mind like a computer. Taking a classic psychedelic is like upgrading your computer's operating system to run this wild, complex, beautiful, kaleidoscopic screensaver.
That's a good way to put it.
Right. You are still sitting in your chair, staring at the monitor, marveling at the colors and shapes. You are the user interacting with the interface. But 5-MeO-DMT is like unplugging the monitor completely, while the internal hard drive suddenly merges with the entire internet.
Yes.
You can't see anything on the screen anymore. It's totally blank, but you are instantaneously connected to absolutely everything at once. There is no interface left.
Yeah.
That analogy captures the essence of it perfectly, especially the lack of an interface. And it explains a lot about the culture that is formed around the substance. The term God molecule was popularized by a book back in 2016. And while the scientific community generally dislikes terms like that, the name stuck in the public consciousness, because it accurately captures what people are desperately trying to articulate.
They're grasping for words.
Exactly. They aren't reporting a hallucination of a deity. They report encountering what feels like the fundamental ground of existence itself.
But if there is no interface and the observer is gone, how do they even remember it? I was reading the article and thinking, how do you remember not being there? Human memory structurally requires someone to record the event.
Right.
Memory is autobiographical. If the autobiographical someone is temporarily deleted, you are essentially trying to retrieve a memory of a time when you didn't exist.
This is one of the most significant cognitive dilemmas in studying this compound. When participants in these studies try to describe the experience, they frequently rely on paradoxes. They will say things like, I was everywhere and nowhere, or it was entirely empty but completely full.
Because language just fails.
Entirely. The ineffability, the sheer inability to put the experience into words, is a core diagnostic criterion of the 5-MeO-DMT state. The memory isn't a narrative memory of events happening sequentially. It is often remembered more as a profound, localized feeling of absolute certainty or absolute terror, stripped of any visual or narrative context.
So if the user's memory of the event is totally wiped, what is physically happening in the hardware of the brain during those 30 minutes to cause that blackout? Like, what is the biological mechanism that turns the narrator off so completely?
Well, to understand the physical mechanism, we have to look at the receptor profile in the brain. The OTW Journal highlights a pivotal 2022 study by Rekweg and colleagues, which provides the central neuroscientific revelation of this entire phenomenon. We know that classic psychedelics, LSD, psilocybin, DMT, all share a very specific signature target in the brain. They act primarily on the 5-HT2A receptor.
The 2A receptor.
Right. That 2A receptor is the primary driver of the rich, visual hallucinations, and the shifting sensory landscapes that users report.
But 5-MeO-DMT has a completely different set of keys for the brain's locks. It doesn't prefer that 2A receptor.
It does interact with 5-HT2A. But its defining characteristic, the thing that separates it from everything else, is an extraordinarily high affinity for the 5-HT1A receptor. The source provides the specific binding affinities. And in pharmacology, human affinities are often measured in nanomolars, which basically measures the concentration required for a molecule to bind to a receptor.
Let's break that down for a second, because nanomolar binding affinities can sound like a completely foreign language to anyone not in a lab.
Totally fair. Think of nanomolar affinity as a measure of magnetic pull. In this measurement system, a lower number actually means a much stronger magnetic pull.
Oh, okay. Lower is stronger.
Yes. So a low number means the drug slams into the receptor and sticks to it powerfully. The binding affinity of 5-MeO-DMT for the 1A receptor is roughly 3 nanomolar. Its affinity for the 2A receptor is about 900 nanomolar.
Wow. So it is magnetically slamming into the 1A receptor, whereas it barely sticks to the 2A receptor at all. That is an enormous difference.
It represents roughly a 300-fold preference for the 1A receptor over the 2A receptor. And the article points out how unique this is by comparing it to psilocin, which is the active compound in magic mushrooms. Psilocin has the exact mirror image of this profile. It has a strong preference for 5-HT2A.
Interesting.
Yeah. This receptor profile is the biological explanation for why 5-MeO-DMT is so vastly different. Because it overwhelmingly prefers this 5-HT1A doorway, we see a much less visual experience and a much more heavily focused experience on pure ego dissolution.
So what does this all mean? If 5-HT2A is the kaleidoscope receptor that gives us the visual trip, are we saying 5-HT1A is fundamentally the ego receptor?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, calling it the power switch for the ego is an apt metaphor. Because when that 1A doorway is opened so forcefully, the downstream effects on the brain's macro networks are dramatic. Specifically, we have to talk about the default mode network, or the DMN.
The default mode network. We hear about this a lot in modern neuroscience, especially regarding psychedelics and meditation. But let's really map out what this network does in our everyday lives, because it is the core of this entire discussion.
The DMN is essentially the brain's self-referential hub. It is a network of interacting brain regions that are active when you are not focused on the outside world. It spans several key areas. First, there's the medial prefrontal cortex.
And what does that do?
That is heavily involved in thinking about yourself, your identity. Then there's the posterior cingulate cortex, which is involved in time travel, so remembering the past and projecting into the future.
Right.
And finally, the angular gyrus, which helps give you a sense of spatial awareness and where your body ends and the rest of the world begins.
So to put that in the context of the listener's actual life, that voice in your head right now that is judging this conversation or wondering what you'll have for dinner later tonight or stressing out about an awkward email you sent yesterday, that is your default mode network humming along.
Exactly.
It is the narrator. It stitches together your past, your present, and your future into a cohesive story that you call me.
It is the ongoing architect of your identity. And what 5-MeO-DMT does is cause a rapid, large-scale breakdown of this network's normal integration. The communication between the medial prefrontal cortex, the posterior cingulate, and the angular gyrus essentially falls apart. the brain rapidly shifts to a globally connected, highly entropic, left hierarchical state.
Which is wild. And the source links this to Robin Carhart-Harris's theory of the entropic brain. The idea is that normal waking consciousness is highly ordered and constrained, which we need to survive. Obviously, you can't go to work if your brain is in chaos.
Right. You need some order.
But psychedelics introduce a highly disordered, flexible state.
The entropic brain theory suggests that conditions like depression, anxiety, and addiction are actually states of too much order. The brain has become rigidly stuck in negative thought loops. The DMN is essentially overactive and tyrannical. When 5-MeO-DMT hits the 1A receptors, it introduces a massive spike of entropy or disorder. The rigid networks collapse.
Which perfectly maps onto the subjective experience we talked about earlier. Like, if the medial prefrontal cortex goes offline, you lose the concept of me.
Exactly.
And if the posterior cingulate goes offline, you lose the concept of time, which explains why users always say the experience felt eternal or outside of time. And if the angular gyrus goes offline, you lose the concept of space, which explains the oceanic boundlessness. You can trace the mystical experience directly to the shutting down of these specific neurological nodes.
We can literally watch this happen. The unique receptor profile, this massive 300-fold preference for 1A over 2A, is undeniably the fingerprint of the void. It tells us that ego dissolution isn't just some mystical, philosophical concept that happens purely in the abstract realm of the mind. The void actually has a biological signature. It is a physical, electrical state that can be tracked and measured on an EEG. We can watch the cortical reorganization happen in real time as the concept of the self vanishes.
I just need to stop for a second because it's incredibly unsettling to think that the me talking to you right now, the identity that I feel so fiercely protective of, is just a fragile electrical network in my brain that can be chemically unplugged by a tryptamine in 30 seconds.
That's a lot to process.
It is fundamentally terrifying, but it's also incredibly liberating because if the ego is just a construct that can be turned off, it means the suffering generated by the ego can also be turned off.
And that realization is the exact pivot point that moved 5-MeO-DMT from an object of pharmacological curiosity into a tool of immense clinical interest.
Right. Because if the hardware can be taken offline and reset, how do we use that to fix the software glitches? How is this neurological reset being harnessed by modern medicine? According to the OOTW Journal, this is rapidly moving out of the underground and into the foreground of treating severe mental illness.
The clinical frontier here is moving at an astonishing pace, and the data is surprisingly strong. For a very long time, 5-MeO-DMT lived almost entirely in the realm of underground ceremony, facilitated by neo-shamans, accompanied by thousands of anecdotal reports of miraculous healing.
But anecdotes aren't data.
Exactly. Science requires measurement. Researchers began to look closer at the sheer intensity of the ego dissolution it caused, hypothesizing that such a profound interruption of normal, rigid brain states could have measurable therapeutic value.
The article outlines some foundational studies that really built the bridge from anecdote to data. Yeah. In 2018, there was a study by Barsuglia and colleagues. They looked at 20 people who were given vaporized toad secretion in a naturalistic setting.
Right.
And they use a very standard psychological tool called the Mystical Experience Questionnaire to measure the intensity of the event. It's graded on a scale out of 5. The mean mystical intensity for these participants was 4.17 out of 5.
To give that number context, anything above a 3 is considered a significant mystical experience. Hitting an average of 4.17 means the participants were routinely maxing out the questionnaire's parameters for experiencing unity, sacredness, and ineffability.
It's practically off the charts.
It is. The astounding part of the Barsuglia study was that 75% of those participants had what is clinically classified as a complete mystical experience. Statistically, that matches or even exceeds the rates you see with a very high heroic dose of psilocybin.
And this wasn't an isolated finding. It was corroborated by a much larger survey that same year. Davis and colleagues surveyed 515 users of 5-MeO-DMT. They found that around 90% of them reported moderate to strong mystical-type experiences.
In psychological research, seeing a 90% response rate for an outcome as profound as a mystical experience is practically unheard of. Oh, yeah. It is a massive statistical anomaly. When you have survey data showing that 90% of a diverse population is having a statistically significant encounter with pure being, the scientific community pays immediate attention. It suggests an incredibly high level of pharmacological reliability.
Like it doesn't matter who you are.
Exactly. It isn't dependent on the user's personality or belief system. The molecule predictably forces the state.
It's not a roll of the dice. If you take the dose, you go to the void. But moving from survey data, where people are just answering questions on the internet about an underground experience, to actual measured clinical efficacy is a massive leap.
A huge leap.
We need to know if it actually heals people. And the turning point mentioned in the article was a 2019 naturalistic study by Uthog and colleagues.
The Uthog study was critical. They followed 42 people who were receiving vaporized toad secretion. They took baseline measurements of their mental health before the experience and then followed up with them afterward.
And what did they find?
The findings were undeniable. They saw significant, lasting reductions in depression, anxiety, and stress, along with measurable increases in life satisfaction and mindfulness.
But the crucial aha insight from that study wasn't just the fact that people felt better. It was the correlation they discovered. They found that the improvements in depression and anxiety directly correlated with the degree of ego dissolution the participants experienced.
That is the defining link. The more completely the self was dissolved during that 30-minute window, the better the clinical outcomes were in the weeks and months that followed.
Wow.
It strongly reinforces the entropic brain theory. It implies that the pathology of depression and anxiety is intricately tied to an overactive, rigid sense of self. When you break that rigidity completely, when you force the DMN offline and allow the brain to reorganize you, you provide a lasting window for relief.
The implication is huge. It implies that to treat severe depression, you don't necessarily need to spend years talking about your childhood trauma to reframe the ego. Sometimes you might just need to completely turn the ego off for half an hour, let the nervous system realize it doesn't need to be in a constant state of rigid defense, and just let it reboot.
And that biological reboot is what biotech companies are currently banking on. The article brings us right up to the present day, noting the massive shifts that occurred in 2025 and 2026.
Right, here's where it gets really interesting.
This compound has moved entirely out of small, naturalistic observational studies and directly into massive, highly controlled, FDA-monitored clinical trials.
The momentum in the biotech sector around this is staggering. The article highlights two major developments that happened recently. First, in early 2025, a biopharmaceutical company called GH Research reported on their clinical program, which they call G8001. This is an inhaled, completely synthetic formulation of 5-MeO-DMT.
Synthetic being the key word there.
Yes, very important. They announced that it successfully met the primary endpoint of a randomized, placebo-controlled phase 2b trial for treatment-resistant depression.
We need to define treatment-resistant depression because it highlights the stakes. These are patients who have tried multiple other avenues of care, various SSRI antidepressants, cognitive behavioral therapy, sometimes even electroconvulsive therapy, and absolutely nothing has worked.
Their depression is deeply entrenched.
Deeply. And the results from GH Research showed a very large, placebo-adjusted drop in depression scores. Crucially, they reported extremely high remission rates within a single week of the treatment.
But in a week, that is wild. And they aren't the only ones chasing this. The second major clinical program highlighted in the source is from a partnership between Beckley Psytech and Atite Life Sciences, utilizing a formulation called BPL-003. Unlike G8001, which is inhaled, BPL-003 is an intranasal formulation of synthetic mebufotenin, so it's administered as a nasal spray. In late 2025, following their own highly positive phase 2b results, BPL-003 actually earned FDA breakthrough therapy designation for treatment-resistant depression.
The FDA does not hand out breakthrough therapy designations lightly.
Mm.
Earning that status means the early clinical signal is genuinely striking to the regulators, and it indicates that the drug may demonstrate substantial improvement over existing therapies. It effectively fast-tracks the drug's development and review process.
That's huge.
It is. Now, the source does responsibly note that late-stage phase 3 confirmation trials are still pending for these programs, so it is not across the finish line yet. But the momentum is undeniable.
We really need to pause and emphasize the magnitude of what this means for the patient experience. Think about what a clinical session with 5-MeO-DMT actually looks like compared to traditional psychiatry or even compared to other psychedelic therapies.
Yeah, the logistics are vastly different.
If you go into a clinic for an MDMA or high-dose psilocybin session, you are going to be there for 6 to 8 hours. You need two therapists in the room the whole time. It is incredibly resource intensive.
The logistics of traditional psychedelic therapy make it very difficult to scale.
Yeah.
But with 5-MeO-DMT, you are talking about an intervention where the acute effects last 30 minutes. A patient could conceivably come into a clinic, undergo the preparation, receive the dose, experience a total cessation of their depressive symptoms through ego dissolution, return to baseline, Integrate the experience with the therapist and be ready to go home by lunchtime.
It is a total paradigm shift. When you contrast that 30-minute pharmacological intervention against the traditional model of psychiatric care, taking a daily SSRI medication that causes systemic side effects, takes weeks to build up in your system, and often only dulls the symptoms rather than resolving them, the idea of a fast-acting high-remission treatment is revolutionary. It moves this god molecule entirely away from the fringe. It forces the medical establishment to take it incredibly seriously as a frontline tool for one of the most stubborn mental health crises in the world.
It is a remarkable progression. However, this is exactly the point where we must pivot, and we must do so starkly.
Right. Because if we stop the deep dive right here, we are leaving the listener with a dangerous utopian view of this substance. We are painting a picture of a magic bullet for depression. But with this unprecedented, almost unbelievable psychological power comes incredibly serious, potentially lethal biological risk.
Yes.
The catch with 5-MeO-DMT is severe. This is not a gentle substance, and it is not forgiving.
It is arguably one of the most physically and psychologically demanding substances in the entire pharmacopoeia.
Yeah.
The OTW Journal is uncompromising about the dangers, and we must be as well. The first primary danger is simply its raw potency. We are dealing with active doses measured in very small milligrams. A standard breakthrough dose of synthetic 5-MeO-DMT might be somewhere between 5 to 10 milligrams.
To put that in perspective for you listening, 5 milligrams is an amount of powder so small it would barely cover the head of a pin.
Exactly. In this territory of extreme micropotency, tiny errors matter immensely. If you aim for 5 milligrams and accidentally take 7 milligrams, that is a 40% overdose.
That's a huge margin of error.
It is. A dose that is slightly too heavy can catapult the user past ego dissolution and into a terrifying, overwhelming psychological state that researchers sometimes call a whiteout blackout, where the brain is just overloaded with chaotic signaling. More concerningly, an overdose can cause dangerous physical reactions, particularly acute cardiovascular strain.
Like heart attacks.
The rapid spikes in heart rate and blood pressure can be significant and dangerous, especially for anyone with pre-existing heart conditions.
And the ultimate danger, the one that the source explicitly warns can be lethal, comes from drug interactions. We talked about how 5-MeO-DMT floods the brain's serotonin receptors, particularly the 1A receptor. But if you combine 5-MeO-DMT with a monoamine oxidase inhibitor and MAOI, the results can be fatal.
And MAOIs are commonly found in things like ayahuasca brews.
Right. There is also a severe risk if combined with common SSRI antidepressants. Combining these triggers a condition called fatal serotonin syndrome.
We really need to explain exactly how serotonin syndrome happens because it highlights why pharmacology requires such strict respect.
Right. Let's explain the mechanism. So think of your brain's serotonin system like a sink with a running faucet and an open drain. 5-MeO-DMT turns the serotonin faucet on full blast, flooding the sink.
Okay, I follow.
Normally, the drain in your brain, an enzyme called monoamine oxidase, is open and handles the overflow, breaking down the excess serotonin so you return to baseline in 30 minutes. But an MAOI drug completely plugs that drain.
Ah.
So if you take an MAOI and then take 5-MeO-DMT, the faucet is on full blast, but the drain is plugged. The sink overflows instantly and catastrophically. That toxic overflow is serotonin syndrome.
That is a brilliant way to visualize it. Serotonin syndrome is a life-threatening condition where serotonin accumulates to toxic levels in the central nervous system. It leads to severe hyperthermia, where your body temperature spikes, dangerously high muscle rigidity, intense seizures, and potentially death.
It's terrifying.
The nervous system simply burns out from the overstimulation. The 2022 Rekweg paper documented in The Source actually points to a real-world fatality resulting from this exact combination of 5-MeO-DMT and an MAOI. This isn't a theoretical abstract risk that scientists are just guessing at. It is a documented lethal reality.
Which perfectly underscores why those clinical trials by GH Research and Beckley Psytech are so strictly controlled. You can't just hand this out. Patients have to be meticulously screened. They have to taper off their existing SSRI antidepressants weeks in advance, and their cardiovascular health has to be verified.
This is why The Source is so adamant about the regulatory status of the compound. It is a Schedule I substance in the United States and heavily restricted globally. It requires rigorous medical screening and direct medical supervision.
Yeah.
The respiratory changes alone. Some people briefly stop breathing or exhibit irregular breathing patterns during the peak of the experience require a trained professional to monitor. It should never, ever be approached casually in a party setting or alone.
Beyond the pharmacological dangers to the human body, there is also a severe ethical and ecological reality that we have to discuss. We mentioned earlier that this compound is naturally found in the defensive venom of the wild Sonoran desert toad.
Right.
Well, because of the recent explosion in popularity of the god molecule in underground wellness circles, a massive conservation crisis has been ignited.
It is an ecological disaster driven entirely by human demand. As the reputation of the compound grew, an entire unregulated industry sprang up around harvesting toad venom. People go out into the Sonoran Desert at night, capture these wild toads, and physically squeeze their paratoid glands to extract the venom, a process known as milking.
And the people doing this often claim it doesn't hurt the toad. They say they just catch them, milk them, and release them. But the source material is very clear about the biological reality of this practice.
Milking deeply stresses the animals. It removes their primary defense mechanism against predators, leaving them highly vulnerable after they are released. Furthermore, the massive influx of humans tramping through their habitat, disrupting their breeding cycles, and relocating them has actively threatened populations that are already dealing with the pressures of climate change and habitat loss.
It's just sad.
The Sonoran Desert toad is becoming increasingly vulnerable in the wild purely because of this psychedelic tourism industry.
I just have to point out the really striking, almost painful irony here. How deeply tragic is it that people who are actively seeking out a profound, unitive experience, an experience of pure being, of total oceanic oneness with nature and the entire universe, are doing so through a practice that actively traumatizes and harms a vulnerable animal population in the wild?
It's completely counterproductive.
Right. You are seeking absolute enlightened connection by inflicting localized ecological damage. It's a profound contradiction.
This raises an important question. And it's a contradiction that the scientific community is trying to rapidly correct. Conservationists and researchers are forcefully urging the complete abandonment of using toad-derived venom. They are advocating exclusively for the use of completely synthetic 5-MeO-DMT.
Because it's exactly the same molecule, right?
Exactly. Synthesizing the molecule in a lab avoids harming the toads entirely. It removes the ecological footprint of the experience.
But there's a pushback from some purists in the underground community who claim the toad venom is better because of the entourage effect, the idea that the other trace chemicals in the venom make the experience more holistic or spiritual.
From a clinical and toxicological standpoint, that is a dangerous fallacy. The toad venom contains a cocktail of other compounds, including bufotenine and various cardiotoxic substances, that are unpredictable and can be actively harmful to the human body.
So it's actually worse for you?
Yes. The synthetic version, however, provides pure 5-MeO-DMT. This purity allows for the precise milligram accurate dosing that is absolutely required to avoid the severe cardiovascular and psychological dangers we just outlined. Using synthetic is not just an ecological imperative, it is a fundamental medical necessity for safety.
This all brings us to the honest bottom line that the OOTW Journal insists upon at the end of their article. The right posture toward this substance isn't unbridled utopian enthusiasm, where we view it as a miracle cure without consequences. And it certainly isn't reckless, casual, recreational use.
No, not at all.
Oh.
The correct posture requires holding two conflicting truths at the exact same time. It requires a posture of deep scientific and psychological fascination regarding its ability to turn off the ego and potentially cure depression, coupled with an unglamorous, strict, and uncompromising caution regarding its lethality and ecological impact.
It demands respect.
Absolutely. We have to respect its unparalleled therapeutic potential while treating it as a genuinely dangerous compound that demands absolute respect, medical oversight, and synthetic purity.
So, to synthesize this massive journey we've been on today, we have explored a true biological paradox. On the clock, the 5-MeO-DMT experience is the shortest, simplest psychedelic experience you can imagine. A 30-second onset, a 5-minute peak, and a 30-minute total return to baseline.
Yep.
Yet in the subjective mind, it is the most profound, most intense, and least describable event a human being can undergo.
We've seen how this molecule fundamentally shuts off the default mode network, the neurological seat of your identity, your past and your future, by acting like a powerful magnet for that unique 5-HT1A doorway in the brain.
You've seen how that total 30-minute erasure of the self is showing massive paradigm-shifting promise in FDA clinical trials for people suffering from treatment-resistant depression. And we've faced the uncompromising realities of its lethal pharmacological risks, the terrifying mechanics of serotonin syndrome, and the tragic ecological baggage of the toad venom industry.
It truly stretches the boundaries of what we understand about consciousness, medicine, and our relationship with nature. But before we finish our discussion today, I want to offer a final, provocative concept for you to mull over.
Okay, let's hear it.
We discussed briefly at the beginning of this deep dive that trace amounts of 5-MeO-GMT are found naturally in the human body, serving a function that science cannot yet explain. Just think about the profound implications of that for a moment.
Oh, wow. If you really take that to its logical conclusion.
Exactly. If our entire deeply rooted sense of individual self, the ego, the constant internal narrator, along with all the daily anxieties, the rigid stresses, and the painful stories that come with it, if all of that can be completely erased by just a few tiny milligrams of a specific molecule, and that exact same molecule is already floating somewhere inside your own body, in your own cerebrospinal fluid, right now. What does that say about the ultimate reality of the stories we tell ourselves every single day? Is it possible that the absolute key to turning off our deepest, most rigid suffering is quite literally already locked inside our own biology, just waiting for us to finally understand it?
That brings us right back to where we started. We are all passengers on that train, looking out the window, totally convinced that our journey, our narrator, and our anxieties are the absolute unshakable bedrock of reality. But maybe the biological switch to dismantle the train has been quietly sitting inside of us all along. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the neuroscience of the void. We invite you to keep questioning these boundaries, keep learning about the incredible, fragile architecture of your own mind, and as always, stay curious.